Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome, and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 66 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Actually, we have to do a new intro for this episode. Welcome to episode 66 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Lene. And we are in love with all things Outlander.
Now let's explain this. So Summer is, unfortunately, I almost said she's no longer with us. That's not what I meant. She's with us. Summer is not feeling well. She's basically got little to no voice. And so our friend of the show, Lene, was kind enough to, like, you almost can't get more last minute than this, although I'm sure you could, to quickly skim the chapter because she's already read it and just come in and join us and help me out since Summer is kind of down for the count. But that's why we did a quick little new intro.
Yeah.
So, basically, announcements this week. Lene, you can help me with these. We had two photos from the Outlander Stars Instagram account. The first one was the characters of Frank and Claire sitting at the end of a little dock.
Now, we haven't seen any scene that's like this, so this is got to be something for the upcoming episodes, right?
I'm thinking so, yes. But the only thing I thought of, and it's written, if you read the comments, I think it reflects this, is that we see, like, from the other side, I don't think from this side, we see, like, from their backs at sunset, we see that in the opening.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's it.
But you never see faces, though, because in the credits you don't see faces of anyone.
Exactly, which I love.
I do.
Which is very a nice touch. But yes, so there's that one, and it says, somehow it still feels like they're the only two people on the planet. Outlander series, behind the scenes, Stars. So that was really nice. I like the shot that they give us of the characters and costume and everything, but it's really nice to see the behind-the-scenes stuff where they could have just cut that out, but I'm glad they included the boom and the reflective shield. That sounds like some Marvel
comic
book. The reflector. and the camera. It's just, it's so neat to see what we don't get to see normally.
Well, there's so many people behind the scenes shows like this. Yeah. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of people. I mean, it's crazy.
Many times with outdoor shoots, if I'm not mistaken, you'll have like a reflector.
Oh,
but
you
on
always
the
have
water,
a reflector.
It's crazy reflective because you have like you're surrounded like almost 360 by reflection.
Well, and there's you have to have reflectors in certain spots to hit the light right, and
depending on where you're with the camera angle is.
Because if something's casting weird shadows, you don't want weird shadows moving around on their faces while you're filming, so you have the reflectors to kind of combat that, kind of.
And the second picture on the Outlander Stars Instagram account was one where it shows the clapboard, and it says Outlander Episode 8, directed by Anna Foresta and DOP Neville Kidd. And it just, except for the hand and the clapboard, it just has
an out-of-focus.
Yeah, an out-of-focus Jamie, or Sam, kind of in the background on the left. And it's all great, but the funny thing is, I like their caption. It says, a lovely picnic in the Scottish Highlands. Action. And the first thing I thought of was, and then literally I was singing it, and that's why I put the little music notes. Today's the day Jamie and Claire had their picnic.
And then
people wrote back and said, oh, I thought of the teddy bear's picnic. And I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just cutesy, but it's funny. I always like to see anything, of course, that they share.
Yeah. I'm always very intrigued by the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Absolutely.
On movies and
on
television.
Exactly.
I love watching that kind of stuff.
Because you just never see it.
Yeah.
Or you see it. You only see the final product. And so there's so much that goes into it. It's almost a shame to lose so much.
Yeah.
We also heard from Serien Junkies, which is a German site. It was a German article, but basically we already knew that Germany was getting Outlander in the new year, but this didn't give us a date, I don't think. Actually, no, sorry. It says starting Tuesday, January 6th.
Yeah.
The German pay channel, Passion, or Passion, will show the German premiere
of
Outlander. So very cool. Very excited. Yeah, Germany has a date. And then a really interesting thing. I know we don't always announce everything, but when it's something new, we're not going to go back in time. But when it's something new and we do see it, we do like to mention stuff that's related to the series, of course, and the books. Mm-hmm. And one of them is a very interesting cover for Dragonfly and Amber for the Portuguese book.
Yeah, I saw this online.
It's very interesting. It definitely stands out from the other covers. Yeah. Of any of the.
It doesn't look like romance-y novel type. No. Like some of the other ones I've seen.
Mm-hmm. It's very misty, but it's almost like it's a photo that's been kind of tweaked. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tweaked to look kind of like a painting.
Yeah.
You know? And with the sun behind him, you can't quite see his face.
Again, yeah. You don't see their faces when I. Yeah. I wonder if they took a page from the Outlander intro. Yeah. That about wraps up our announcements. And we did actually have one thing we wanted to share. Lene is new to them, and she'll be checking them out later this week. But Summer and I did want to, just for a moment or two, mention GoPop TV again, the app. We are just so excited to be part of that, and we really hope that you'll check it out. It's GoPop.tv, and currently it's an app for the iPhone, iPad. But it is also, you can also use their features on a website. We'll include that in our blog post for this episode. That even if you have an Android, so until their Android app is ready, or if you just don't have a smartphone, you can actually go to the website and still check it out. So come see what it's like to.
The whole idea just reminds me of
live tweet pop up video.
It just reminds me of MTV pop up video, and I'm just like,
exactly.
I love
it's
that.
Wacky,
I love pop up video,
but it's so neat. Oh gosh, that was like our childhood. I mean,
I know.
Or
reminds me of the 80s. Takes me back.
Oh Lord, yes it does. Yeah, so check it out, and we'll give you the link for that, and let us know what you think. So once again, thank you, Lene, for joining me, because if I had talked about this on my lonesome, it would have been like civil.
What do you mean trying to have conversations with yourself?
I wouldn't have even been that interesting. Sybil would be more interesting than me trying to have a conversation with myself. So, yeah.
I don't know. I talk to myself a lot.
So, the interesting thing about this is it's a new chapter, fair enough, but it's also the start of a new section, a new part two.
Where we first delve into. I remember when I first read, of course, when you first start Dragonfly and Amber, you're just like, you get
whiplash
effect.
Exactly.
Like, what is going on? And you're freaking out and like. And it's frustrating because you start getting into the Rihanna and Roger storyline, and then comes the kind of the climax of that whole first section of, you know, Claire and the gravestones and everything else, and her explaining.
And the yew trees.
And the yew trees. I remember, yeah, you guys talked a lot about that.
Yes, we did. I talked a lot.
Well, obviously, Diane, she obviously had
there's
him
a purpose.
In there for a reason, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I just remember finally going, oh, okay, now we finally get to see what happened. And then you realize it literally starts where almost it left off in the last book. And you're kind of, I remember the first time I read it, kind of trying to race through to at least to see. How did we get to Claire going back through the stones without, you know? Anyway, so I don't know. When I first started, I was happy to be back in their storyline, but still kind of like,
nervous.
What happened? How did it get to this?
Absolutely.
You know?
Because you start the book thinking you're going to start with this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen. And so by the time you get to this, it's two sides of the same coin. You're like, thank goodness. And also, what the actual.
In the back of your mind.
Hundreds of pages going, you just are expecting at some point something's going to happen, and you're just like, it's a big book.
Like all her books,
yes.
They're big books, so you're going to have to get through the meat of them to like get to the very end. So the whole time it's kind of in the back of your mind, like, okay, but still, how did Claire get back in her own time? You know, the whole time you're worrying about it, you know?
And so this is a new part, which makes sense, and I'll say a little bit more of what we said for chapter 5 read along, which was that chapter was the end of the first portion of the shape of the novel. Remember, this shape is a dumbbell.
Yeah.
So this was the first weight,
I guess. Yeah, the first rounded weight.
Exactly. And now we're starting chapter 6, part 2.
Which is the bar.
Is the beginning of the horizontal bar. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is part 2, The Pretenders. in Le Havre, France, February 1744. So finally, we're in France in the 18th century. And the chapter is called Making Waves. Now, we've definitely, as Lene and I have said, there's a definite time and location shift. So we know something is different.
Because at the end of the first book, they had talked about going to Italy, didn't they?
Yes.
So I expected when they finally got back to their storyline that they would be in Italy and then come to find out they're in France because that's where...
Mm-hmm. They were kind of sent.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to say yes, but they were kind of sent.
They were kind of sent. Yeah. So
Connie, listener named Connie, thank you, Connie, for your comments again, writes, look at that, plural, the pretenders.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't just an allusion to Bonnie Prince Charlie. It's Jamie and Claire who are the pretenders in Paris, pretending to support Prince Charles Edward Stuart when they're really trying to derail his efforts to reclaim the throne of Great Britain. To reclaim the throne of Great Britain.
Yeah, it's a fun play on words because he was called the Great Pretender and all of that. Yeah.
And something else she points out, which is Connie writes, quote-unquote, stirring things up. So, like, making waves.
Mm-hmm.
Trouble, you know? Are you causing
trouble?
See,
now, in the beginning of this, did they say for sure that they were going to try to stop the uprising? Or were they just there to try to be involved in it? That's what I never really understood. Were they trying to stop him for sure or trying to just change
enough
of what was going on to stop the end battle kind of thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I can't speak for Diana, but from what I understand, they would like nothing better than to prevent Culloden from happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least... the effects of Culloden from happening. And the way you prevent the effects of Culloden from happening is either have a much better prepared army or you prevent it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing that would have helped. So
reading the book, the whole, and it kind of gets into this in the end of the last book when she talks to that monk. You know, she's confessing to him about time and changing time and the effects of her being there, and he was kind of the theory, wasn't he, of like, well, you were obviously always meant to be here at this time, and so whatever is happening will have always been be the thing that happened. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So to me, it was kind of like...
getting into like the TT, as I say, as people in the Diana Outlanderverse say, the TT, time travel.
Yeah.
You're getting into Diana's theory of time travel, and it causes a lot of people, and I mean this with love, because it happens to me too, headaches.
Yeah.
But can you change the past? Can you not change
the
past? But if you go to the past, isn't it already happened?
Yeah.
But so, yeah.
Well, yeah.
See? Headache.
Yeah. Well, and with Jack Randall.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Her, you know, I can't go into that because there are spoilers, but I mean, you know, her saying, knowing his death, and then him getting trampled in the hall, in the bottom of Wentworth.
Yeah.
Technically,
so
that would have changed his death date. That would have been changing it.
But then what happened in Outlander was not his death date.
You know, and how I view time, I mean, I would think whatever is meant to happen will have been the thing that was always meant to happen. So I kind of agree with Diana in that way. But I don't know. What if they had no scruples and morals about the whole thing?
If they had no morals,
they would have just gotten close to Charles Stuart and just killed him.
Exactly.
Right? But... they couldn't do that. I mean, they're good people.
And we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves,
so,
because that is a conversation. So, so finally, we are back with our Jamie and Claire. We haven't seen or heard from them since we left them at the Abbey of Saint Anne de Beaupré after their escape from Scotland.
I'm glad you can say that, because I...
That's okay. So Teresa Kay writes, the author first makes sure we realize that James Fraser is dead and Claire Fraser is in the 20th century. Then she brings us back into the past and into their lives. And that's the whole point. That's the whiplash. The whiplash is more of the time and like, what the heck?
Yeah.
But the fact with the whole gravestone and all this stuff, and it's 200 years, like, there's no way someone can live that long. So
it's like
absolutely.
It's like the beginning of the book is like the impact of the whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
And then her jumping back to the past is like the after effects of it. You're like, you're snapped back in again, and you're like, okay, you know? It's intense.
It is very... This, I know you've heard me say it 5 million times. This is my favorite book.
Yeah.
In spite of that whiplash. Mm. So Claire suffers from pretty bad morning sickness. So we find out she's still pregnant.
She's pregnant.
Yeah.
She's still pregnant.
So she had heard some stamping in the room.
Because
she's in bed. She's not feeling too hot. And
she's
got
the morning sickness.
Yes.
He gives her some bread to try to calm her morning sickness because he hears her like, starting to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of thinks, okay, got some bread down. I'm okay. And then she hears the stamping.
And we find out that she's thinking, was it like, you know, was it some kind of bug or something like that, I think. And Jamie's like, oh, no, not but a rat. And she goes and...
Well, she turns and looks and
sees
like
all the blood pool, and the...
Just the little pool of blood. And
And she's like, okay, yeah, no. Bread's not staying
And when you're
down.
Pregnant, it's so strange because when you're pregnant, it's not just the visual things. I mean, when you're pregnant, smells affect you
absolutely.
So much more. And it could be like just the wrong smell or just the... I mean... All kinds of things can make you nauseated mm-hmm. when you're pregnant and make you just lose it. I remember that, and it sucked.
Mm.
Like, the only thing I could do to combat my morning sickness was, like, nibbling on having crackers or pretzels or something dry to nibble on, like, mm-hmm. literally all day long.
Mm.
I couldn't let my stomach get too full, and I couldn't let it get too empty.
Yeah.
Or else I would just, like, then you're past the point of no return,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm.
Her having, you know... bread nearby totally made sense to me. I was like, oh, I sympathize.
Yeah, the 18th century saltines.
Yeah, basically.
And then there's a little oomphing, and it's funny.
Oomphing.
Girl? Sex?
Oh. Well, they don't actually...
They do, because he's afraid. She's like, would you like to? And he's like, well, yeah, but I'm afraid I'm going to hurt the baby.
They don't actually do it, though, because the maid comes in and gets... She's.
They do it later.
Yeah, they do it later.
But, okay, they talk about it.
The maid.
They talk about
she talks about it. Oh, yeah, perfect Gaelic timing of the maid coming in right when they were, like, getting ready.
Getting ready.
So,
and that's why he puts a bolster on his
lap.
Yeah. So, a little umphing. They're getting ready. But my point was, it's funny that he's afraid that he might harm the baby.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to scare him.
I know, exactly. LNG writes... So this is the first time Jamie has been in charge of helping a pregnant woman deal with morning sickness. I don't know if he was accustomed to it through anyone else at this time.
No.
And his fear of making love to his wife and harming the fetus is so cute.
Because he was away the whole time Jenny
was,
got married.
Yes.
And had a baby. So he hasn't been around her at all. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure he probably has very limited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure he has
experience.
More experience with horses being pregnant, than,
yes.
which is completely different. So,
the chambermaid, as you said, the chambermaid comes in, and Jamie is already trying to make friends and do some business. So, yes, she interrupts them, but they make conversation, and he's already trying to deal his cousin's wine.
Yeah,
and so he starts to talk about wine and how he might be able to match the price the innkeeper currently pays. But still increase the quality. And they, you know, that conversation happens. And then, mm-hmm. after that, they do, Jamie and Claire, not Jamie and the innkeeper and the maid, they do begin to make love. And Claire points out the shape of Jamie's ears. Has Claire, or thus Diana, has she remarked on the ears before?
I don't believe so. I think it's the first time she talks about them kind of being pointed at the tips. And I think the reason she says that is because I remember in I think it's in this book,
mm-hmm.
she talks about her daughter and how her ears, she has her father's ears and how they are the same kind of elfin-looking ears.
I think that's why
it kind of is brought up here
mm-hmm.
because it's, you know, in later in the book,
mm-hmm.
she remarks on it, I believe. It's been a while since I've read it.
And when she says they're small and pointed at the tips, my first thought was like a fairy or like an elf. But Diana writes through Claire's words, they're fawn-like, which is, you know, it's still mythological, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Connie writes, Claire is careful not to press on the healing ridges of the fresh scars. We are reminded of the physical abuse Jamie suffered fairly recently at the hands of Black Jack Randall at Wentworth Prison. I'm glad you brought that up, because yes, she's careful with them, but when I read this series, I literally had both books. I went from one to two. I didn't have mm-hmm. to wait like people who read early on did.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to wait. But after going through the first five chapters and then coming back to chapter six, because even if you go from book to book, I think, and I correct me if I'm wrong, it just seems like forever and a day since Wentworth happened. And I know it's not,
mm-hmm.
but we're reminded that, look, he's still... literally bruised and battered.
Yeah.
He's still healing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that takes you straight back to that cell. I mean, it does, because I don't think of Wentworth, you know, as part of this. It is part of their story, his story. But I don't think about that as being in chapter 6 because it's from Outlander. But, I mean, dang, she brings it right back home. When they're done with their oomphing, she tucks the quilt around his shoulders, quote, sealing us in a pocket of warmth. And I'm like, okay, where did your mind go?
Pocket of warmth?
Taking a quilt or something, a blanket on the bed, and, like, taking it up and putting it on someone, like, tucking it around them.
Like a little kid, like a mom does
Well,
a kid.
That's okay, then I guess we're different on that. Because I thought of a Dutch oven.
Are you serious?
I did. I thought, wait, no, okay, she's not doing that. But
oh my gosh, Ginger.
So then she asks.
I don't know what you do in bed with your friends.
Oh no, my friends. Girl. Then she asks if he's happy about the baby. So this is an understandable question, but also kind of a scary question.
Yeah,
because you
want to
know the
question.
Answer, but you're also afraid to know the answer.
Yeah. Well, in the situation, they're in a precarious position, so it's kind of, yeah.
And he, of course, is happy and he's proud, but also afraid for her, the birth, the babe, etc. Remembering that, you know, his mother died in childbirth, so he knows his sister's done quite well, although his sister had a hard labor mm-hmm. when they were both there at Lettybrock before.
But lots of stuff can go wrong, especially back then. I mean,
absolutely. He's very protective of her, yet he knows there is nothing he can do to help her through the actual pregnancy. He says, "I would do anything for you, and yet there's nothing I can do. It doesn't matter how strong I am or how willing. I cannot go with you where you must go, nor even help you at all. And to think of the things that might happen, and me helpless to stop them. I am afraid. And yet, when I think of you with my child at your breast, then I feel as though I've gone hollow as a soap bubble, and perhaps I shall burst with joy." Oh, man.
He has a way with words.
Yeah. Totally. So here's where we get another of the iconic lines from the series. Mm-hmm. Jamie says to her, "Oh, Claire, you do break my heart with the loving you." Mm-hmm. Connie writes, This section of the chapter is exposition and narrative about what happened since the end of Outlander. Yeah, so there is a lot about, we learn, as Lene said, we learn here and now what happened. Mm-hmm. Why they're here, why they're not in Rome, how they got here.
Yeah.
And, yeah, basically how they got here. So we learned that they had planned to go to Rome, that Jamie had gotten a recommendation as a translator to James Stuart, the exiled king of Scotland. We also learn, by the by, that Claire and Jamie had arrived at the Abbey on December 26th, which is St. Stephen's Day, or the first Christian martyr. I'm just throwing that out there.
They arrived the day after Christmas?
That's what it says in the book. I was like, really? Huh. I was shocked. And you,
I remember it being winter, because absolutely. I'll never forget. And this is one thing I'm looking forward to seeing them do in the show, because I don't know if filming is going to line up with the seasons eventually or not.
Eventually maybe,
because
Outlander itself will likely not, because they started in the fall and they'll end in the fall.
Yeah.
And the story of Outlander started in this. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying ultimately it could.
Yeah. I'm curious, because the whole scene, okay, because I when I read, I don't know how everybody mm-hmm. else is reads. But when I read, and especially books like these that I've read many times, it's kind of like this movie going on in my mind, and I see the visuals of
the movie
of
this, in my mind.
Thanks. Yes.
Yeah, Lene hates Broadway.
No, I love Broadway. Shut
Girl,
up.
I know.
But
she really hates Miss Saigon.
Shut up. I love it. Girl. So anyway, I don't know. The scene of Wentworth, I just, especially in their escape, that's what I'm curious to see.
Yes.
Is because for me, the picture, everything's covered in snow, and it's really deep in snow, and them trying to escape in the snow. And here they're going to be filming, and there's not going to be snow on the ground. Mm-hmm. And the whole scene where they get stopped by the English soldiers, mm-hmm. and she has to kill him. And I mean, the only reason they stop is because, you know, there's blood dripping off of Jamie into the snow. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm just really curious how they're gonna work all of that. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure they'll do fine.
And whether or not they do the wolf, we don't know. But the whole reason for
the wolf
was because he may have been ill as well, but he was hungry or starved, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was winter and there was lack of food. And that's why he... Doesn't mean someone... A wolf can't be sick in the summertime. I'm not saying that. But there's much more...
Chance of that
chance
happening.
Of him getting food in the summer when rabbits are hippity-hoppitying around.
Anyway, back to...
So, yeah, if you remember one of the questions when I asked Diana the question about that whole date of the winter solstice and Claire's birthday. Oh, the Pentecost, exactly. So the whole thing that started me thinking about, that got me to that question was, I remember, well, the whole upper room at the end, that made me think about it. But the date that they did that was December 21st. So if they got, that makes sense. So the book here, Dragonfly Amber Chapter 6, is telling us that they arrived at the Abbey December 26th. So they were starting to make their plans around the 21st, 22nd, and then rescued him around that time. And then I'm not sure if they rescued him on Christmas Day. I don't know what that day was. It took them some time to get to the Abbey. But wouldn't it be funny?
How long would it take to cross the channel?
Oh, not more than today, not more than an hour or something. But back then in a boat, back then in a boat,
day, right?
At least probably a half day, if not a day.
And the weather wasn't great because it was winter.
No, it was exactly.
So it would probably take them most of a day. So if they...
It still could have been part of the... He could have been...
I bet it was Christmas Day that they got him out and then they got to the Abbey.
And then if they got him on Christmas Day...
Or even Christmas Eve.
Or even, good Lord.
If they got him out... Either. If they got him out Christmas Eve because it was in the middle of the night and then they... Got on the road Christmas Day and then got...
Okay, how symbolic is that? Yeah. It's a birthday, a rebirth.
Yeah.
Girlfriend?
I never even thought about that.
I didn't know it was that day. All I know was the 21st was on, longest night of the year, and the solstice, whatever, and I just I counted time and then upper room, I thought of that. I never thought about the day they actually...
Neither did I.
I rescued him. So anyway, that was interesting, and it's just interesting that...
It's very interesting.
It is what it is. The abbot calls them to his office and says that he'd heard from King James and that Charles Stuart was headed to France and that this news was secret and it could not be... It would be known soon enough, but for the time being was very, very secret. We learn some interesting information about the papal messenger and how it's likely the most... was the most secure across Western Europe because it could not be interfered with government customs officers. And thus, it was less likely to be tampered with or read. And that's why all of James' mail was sent via papal messenger.
I wonder, you know, the fact, you know, if any of this... I wonder if Diana researched this and found that they really did send messages this way, and that's
why she used it. That would be interesting.
I would be curious to know if that was actually used, because that would be the most secure way to send messages.
And it's in Rome's best interest because they're trying Catholics in general would like to have the Catholic king restored to Scotland or anywhere on the British Isles. So because he doesn't know whether James is coming. Because he was invited by the King of France, or at his father's behest, he asks Jamie and Claire to go to Paris and make nice, make friends with James to assist, quote, in whatever ways he might require.
Yeah.
That's a big question.
Yeah, that's a big assist.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they first went to Le Havre to meet with Jamie's cousin, Jared Fraser, who was an importer of wines and spirits. Jamie had lived with him, we find out, when he was 18, when he was in Paris finishing his schooling. So, man, I mean... Diana was very smart, adding some little facts here and there, but not necessarily explaining them in Outlander. Just a lot of forethought.
I mean, she plants stuff in books that doesn't come around until like the next couple books later. And I'm like, I can't think that far ahead. How does she even do that? It blows my mind. I just sit there and I think about it. And
well, the funny thing was, from what I understand, although now, we have no inside knowledge of any kind. But from what I understand, from, I believe, stuff that Diana has written on Facebook and on CompuServe, the forget-me-nots will be explained. Remember those? Now, that having been said, also from what I understand, like, explained like in the last book or something like that. Also from what I understand, she did not have any expectation of anything in book one about those flowers. They really... Not that they didn't mean something, maybe her subconscious did it, but she didn't write them necessarily on purpose to have a meaning. Since book one, 20-something years ago, she has woven it into the story, mm-hmm. which we will find out about. I don't know, and I could, you know, you guys correct me if I'm misremembering this, but when I heard this, I about freaked the freak out, because if you're going to have one kind of symbolic flower, it's going to be forget-me-not.
Yeah,
no. I mean, what the actual heck?
Yeah.
Okay, so after Jamie, I want to say James, after Jamie returns from a time out with Jared, basically tasting all of his wares, he comes back to their shared room, and it's then, and this is when we hear him call Claire's eyes the color of a very fine whiskey. So that makes me think, because he was like saying, oh, I realize, like his the conversation was,
is this,
I realize what
it
was.
This is the part where he comes back drunk.
Yes, exactly.
And he argues about, I'm not drunk.
I'm not drunk, exactly. And his, exactly, what his
if you can stand up, you're not drunk.
Exactly. If you can stand up, you're not drunk. But this is also, of course, very iconic, the whole color of her eyes thing.
Mm-hmm.
Reading it the first time, you know, you don't know anything from anything, so you're just like following the story. It's brand new. You can't judge it except for how it affects you. But having read it originally so long ago,
mm-hmm.
I totally, if you would have asked me before, I guess, my most recent read along of this chapter, like if you'd have asked me a month ago, I would have thought that we find out her eyes are whiskey colored in Outlander.
But we don't.
No, we find out her eyes are like a golden-ish, but they're not called whiskey-colored until this book. And I did not remember it that way.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I forgot about that. So that was kind of neat, too.
Mm-hmm.
So another, as I said, that was another iconic moment.
And then he drops face first onto the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Falls. Then he proves her right by falling down and not getting back up.
Now, they wake the next morning. Connie writes, Jamie is hungover. Quote, his hair stuck out in all directions like a hedgehog's spines, but his skin was pale and clear, and the hands clutching the coverlet were steady. So, hedgehog references, Connie writes, make me smile. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? It's just only fair. I hope they, you know, I know they can't do scene by scene. There's no way they can do every single thing in the books. But this would be so funny if, when they do season two, they included something about his hair, because we always make fun of Claire's bedhead.
Yeah.
And she had some pretty awesome bedhead.
She had some good bedhead in the series so far. When did she call... Oh, no, it's Outlander. I think it's when he jumps out of the bed on their wedding night. She says he looks like a fretful porpentine or something.
I think so.
I just love it. It's too cute.
So Jamie and Claire have an appointment at the docks with Jared, whom Diana describes as a small, spare, black-eyed man who bore more than a passing resemblance to his distant cousin, Murta.
Mm-hmm.
Whom we haven't heard much of, but he... did accompany them.
Are we not going to discuss the whole, like...
We're getting there.
Jamie going at it with her when he was drunk and then not remembering it the next
morning. Oh, no. Apparently, I skipped that. Go for it.
I just thought it was funny.
It was very funny.
Because, like, she's like, you were very single-minded. And he's like, that doesn't seem fair. I don't remember any of it. I just thought it was funny. That's all.
No, it was very funny. And apparently, I forgot it. I forgot to include it. So Jared describes that he has a business opportunity for himself, but that he will have to leave, and he doesn't want to leave his home and business unwatched or his business unmanned. So he asks if Jamie, and thus Claire, will take care of it while he's gone, and it would be 6 months. And he would leave him his home and his servants at his disposal, and he could, you know, plus give him a salary, so... For these pretenders, it was a pretty nice, sweet deal.
Yeah.
You know, very convenient,
Diana. To
just
step into, like, a nice house with servants and a business and everything else, yeah.
And
it's really nice.
It's a very... They make a very... Jared makes a very interesting toast. He has his wine glass, and he toasts to the king, literally over a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire's kind of like, huh? Mm-hmm. And... they explain it to her, and it's kind
of
clever.
The king over
now,
the water.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It makes me think, I did not Google it, but it makes me wonder if indeed that was a thing.
What do you mean?
Wouldn't surprise me. People doing that.
Oh, yeah.
In private.
Yeah.
Or not in private, because
in public.
You can... In public, exactly.
You'd say it as you pass
exactly.
The drink over your water glass, yeah.
So this appointment they have is with Jared at the docks, near Jared's...
warehouse, isn't it?
Yes. So there is an altercation near a ship's gangway.
Ah, Claire.
Yeah. Oh, big time. And they
this
say,
is one of those moments where it's just like, Claire can't just stay the hell out of it and keep her mouth quiet. Like, she has to, like, get involved and blurt things out she shouldn't be saying. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And she does it throughout the series. I mean, she's true to form and true to character, I suppose, that way. But it's like, girl, when are you going to learn? This just gets you in trouble.
It totally does. And people are, there's some kind of altercation, there's a scuffle or something, and mm-hmm. someone says, they hear someone saying something about, it might be sickness. And of course, she's a healer, so she offers to go look, and Jamie says, no, it wouldn't be safe. She, of course, disregards this and goes on her way.
Good God, why can't she all just listen sometimes?
And she sees the sick man on the makeshift stretcher, and he's being carried off the ship, and she does examine him a little bit from a little bit afar, and she says, I'm afraid it's smallpox. Ugh. And with those words, gets a very nasty enemy.
Mm-hmm.
The captain howls in anguish. She just screwed the pooch. Absolutely. He's almost threatening her. He calls her, and I looked up the names, because I do speak French, but not fluently. He calls her a bitch and a stupid woman in French. And Jamie's there and tells her he should treat his wife with respect. So Jamie definitely stands up for her. But we learn the captain's name is none other than the Comte de Saint-Germain. Jared takes them to a quote, an upper room of a tavern. I'm like, don't worry, I'm not going into the biblical symbology again. But I thought it was funny mentioning that Claire. What Diana uses again. The Comte lost all his ship goods. The shipment of wine he would have sold, which was worth about a year's wages.
Oh, dear God.
Jared had purchased the other half of the stock of the same wine that was available at all, and now
he had the monopoly. So exactly. He gets to benefit from this misfortune of this other person. And
they're celebrating. So not only did the Comte lose his goods, his shipment of
products.
He physically
lost the ship.
He lost a freaking ship. And that's, I could not imagine what that would be worth to someone. I mean, not just the livelihood, but
especially
the means
in that
to life.
Time.
Exactly. And they have to, because of the sickness, and because apparently what they say is, if Claire had, I guess, not basically said it in the presence of the dockmaster or someone, or if it had been a little quieter, they may have been able to
sneak the sick people off.
Money would have crossed palms. But they would have had, you know, maybe an understanding and gotten
the goods
the wine
off the ship,
because the wine should have been fine if it's sealed.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't have smallpox in it.
No.
So the wine may have been able to be saved, but because she announced it in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody heard, and the Comte had no way, there was no way to keep
there's
it
no
down.
Way to, there's no way to quiet it.
It got, exactly.
And that's, I mean, I can't blame the guy, to be completely honest.
Oh, no.
I can't blame him
for
being so angry.
Of course.
Can you imagine losing not only goods that are worth a year's salary, but your
a way to make money.
A way to make money.
Yeah. And it really is unbelievable. So what I find even harder, because what happened, I mean, if Claire hadn't seen anything, probably everything would have been okay.
Yeah.
Obviously. But because she saw something, it was literally, just because she saw it doesn't mean it had to turn out this way. Not that she didn't know what from what. She didn't know that by making this huge pronouncement or saying it too loudly that she was damning the ship. She did not know that. I get it. But she could have done the exact same thing, told Jamie, Jamie, I think it's smallpox or whatever, and not just been...
On the down low.
Yeah, on the down low, and may not have been safe, but she would not have gotten such an enemy.
Yeah.
That's all. And so anyway, so it's just interesting how one step too far and you ruin like some, it's crazy how much damage she did.
Yeah.
It still shocks me every time I read, like, oh my gosh. And so they have to fire the boat. They have to burn the boat. And so they observe the firing of the Comte's ship. The decks were soaked with oil, and then they threw a torch onto the boat and it lit up.
It's like crazy lit up.
Exactly. Totally. And Teresa Kay writes, Chapter 6 returns the reader to the details of the daily life in the marriage of Jamie and Claire. It's a longer chapter filled with many details of their new life, from the sights and sounds of French daily life to the beauty of their physical and spiritual relationship to the potential new dangers in their lives. Of course, all the while, the reader can also hear the drums of the coming war beating in the background. Mm-hmm. And the formation of new enemies. Thanks, or creation Claire. Of new enemies.
Good job, Claire.
So, even though that was a pretty long chapter, that was a pretty quick read-along because discussion, because we know we're not here to read the book.
We hit the main ideas. Maybe Diana wanted to, she wanted to let the reader know that even though they're in France and they're not in Scotland mm-hmm. anymore, there are still some serious dangers in their life going on right now. And now, I mean, they had to kind of sneak Claire away into this little tavern and he, you know, didn't Jared like send out some of his men to kind of keep watch to make sure nobody was sent to come looking for them? I mean,
Claire, didn't she offer to go talk to somebody and say, you know, oh, let me go do something? And he's like,
no,
you will not.
You're just going to make it worse.
Because if you don't, you'll make it worse and you will probably get raped. And if you live long enough, you may get raped.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they may just slit your throat. I mean, it's,
yeah.
It was that. And she was a woman, which is not a safe thing. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of the fact that she is who she is and did what she did, she's a woman, which makes it not safe anyway. But the fact of what she did.
Yeah.
Girl, I bet so many boat people, they may have been, like Jared, was silently or privately rejoicing because he was benefiting.
Oh, yeah.
But among other shippers or among other people who own ships, they probably all would have had hatred for Claire at that point.
Oh, they would all have the same reaction.
They understand. Oh, could you imagine? I truly can't.
Yeah. No, and Jared even, like, kind of, he describes the fact that he bought the only other supply of that wine, and now he's got it, and he's kind of like, ooh, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that kind of
sums up the chapter.
Absolutely, and kind of quick and dirty, and for a long chapter. Again, this is a pretty quick and dirty read-along discussion, and thank you, Lene, for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Could you tell us, since you have the book in your hands, what is Chapter 7?
Chapter 7 is Royal Audience.
Ah.
Royal
That's
Audience.
I think we may be, we may meet a royal.
Yeah, I think so. So
thank you, as always, so much for joining us. Thank you, Lene, at Nehruzu. Thank you. Thank you, Lene, for just coming at such last minute notice to help us with this poor Summer not feeling so well. And so she will be back. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. My own.